All right, welcome, folks. Let's see if there are. We do have a couple of folks who are calling in. So, welcome today. Today is the meeting six for the Tehama Groundwater Commission Demand Management Working Group. And so, where there's a few folks here who are listening in on the phone, and then we have several folks in the room. Do you know if talks in there?
I did not hear otherwise from her.
Okay. So, we realize we're going to just let you know that that's what we do.
We can, but I think we can go through introductions and just kind of get started and get
Okay.
primed.
So, let's do that. And so, while we're doing introductions, I'll hold things up on the to the screen so folks in the room can follow along. But just to get started with introductions, my name is Stephanie Horry. I'm a facilitator with the Consensus Building Institute, so serving as the facilitator for today's meeting. And then just in the room, let's do a round robin of introductions.
Justin Jensen, Deputy Director of Public Works, Tehama County.
Hal Train, Groundwater Commission.
Steve Brittle, grower.
Bill Bohrer, grower.
Ben Myrie, Tehama County.
Michael Ward, Groundwater Commission, District 4.
Ian Turnbull, Capay area.
Jim Simon, Executive Director of Flood Control.
Oh, and by the way, we have someone new, a new face here. This is Lena, new full-time admin for the district. So she's in her office. She's just getting wound up, so she's gonna, this is an exposure meeting for her, but you'll start seeing more of her involvement as we move forward.
Lena.
Lena. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hi, Lena.
Very appreciative. Lena's here today. All right. I'm just gonna pull up. These are very, very our standard slides. So nothing too different, but just it's helpful to keep us oriented for today. So just as an update, just tracking of where we are. As we said, we've been meeting for, this is our sixth meeting. And so for today, there's a little bit of follow-up of what we were discussing back in meeting five. And so we have several updates that we want to orient folks there. As well as we also think this is a good moment for us to kind of review and revisit the concept of demand management programs kind of at a high level, as Justin will give some background, like we have a potential to utilize some help from the technical consultants, and so for them to have a better understanding of how you all feel about the different elements of a demand management program is going to really, really help them utilize their resources. As well, it's the start of the year, so it's also helpful to kind of game plan, like how we want to be spending kind of the next remainder of our time here. So as I said, today is going to be focused. Welcome, Todd. Today we'll be doing several updates. I know there's some time stamps along with those. I think we're going to be very, very flexible with today's time of how much time we're going to be spending on updates versus follow-up versus demand management program. So just kind of put that to the side. We're going to be a bit fluid there, but those are the three main buckets of things that we want to talk about today. But the plan is, again, to adjourn at 10:30. General participation things, still the very same. Main one, actually, really, I would say, since we do have folks calling in and listening into the conversation, all the more helpful it is to make sure you state your name as much as possible, but most particularly, one person speaking at a time. So that's the only thing that I'm going to be just really, really pushing on. So with that, let's just go back into our standard ones of working group updates. And so as a reminder, though, from what we were discussing at meeting five was we did do a follow-up of that discussion whether or not to use the state's groundwater management program around two Prop 26 grants. In particularly for using some of the grant funding for developing a demand management technical memo for that was focused on Corning. Justin can go to more explanation on that. We had started talking about some of the based off of the new identified polygons, what were the new calculated sustainable yield or safe yield estimates for those. So we started exploring that. We focused in on three polygons in particular, better understanding what was going on there. And then we also explored a bit of an example of a demand management kind of strategy program, Madeira's, where they had this kind of transferable water allocation framework approach. And so we had discussed, kind of explored that at a light touch. All again, very much more of like conceptually, how do folks think about that idea? So those were kind of the main topics. We had a lot of questions related to, you know, better understanding budget and model. And so some of the action items from that were kind of like that list of questions that we wanted to either for the staff or to technical consultants to kind of look into. So any kind of questions for that before I turn it over to Justin to give more details on that? Yeah,
I'm just wondering what this is Michael Ward. I just wonder what the status is. I haven't been to our website lately, and wondering, do we have all the previous recordings posted at this point?
Not all yet. They go in sort of cycles, but we have some recorded posted.
So I think like the first ones, technologically, we were able to figure out how to get them posted. The here it was the early December one is posted. We have a recording for the December 18th ready to go. It just needs to wait for the next groundwater commission to give the update, and that's then we post the recording.
Yeah, we don't post until you report out in the public meeting, and that was a requirement put upon us by the government folks upstairs.
All right. Well, with that, how about let's go to Justin, give an update on.
Yeah. So right now, the way that this first item is looking is we have permission to go down this road of getting a TM put together with one meeting to start talking about what their scope's going to be and what roads they're going to go down. So that's part of what I was talking about prior to the recording a little bit to sort of frame this is we want to be able to give them as much direction as possible before we even have that first meeting so that we can sort of narrow their focus when they come in and talk to us. Ultimately, the best possible outcome would be that, you know, they sort of have a couple of choices of roads to go down, right, when we start talking about this technical memo. So that's where that sits. So that will be ERA and David's Engineering. They are sort of the gurus, both locally and done several programs statewide. So they have quite a bit of insight as to how they work and what has worked. But also you'll see when we have this discussion, we need to sort of have some really serious talks about what's different between Tehama County and those other programs and why, right? Because Tehama County doesn't necessarily share all the same attributes as programs that have happened in some other areas. So that's going to be sort of a big part of our discussion. So sustainable yield, hopefully everybody got that copy of the reworked raw data for sustainable yield. I know that it's a whole bunch to look at. Right. Those are some big, serious spreadsheets, and I don't have them yet on the data viewer. I hope to have them really soon, but they're not quite there yet. I did, in the first round, there were some just obvious, super bad, glaring issues, and I talked those through with the folks at LSCE, and we came to a conclusion about them going in and fixing those issues. And what those issues did is they dramatically skewed both consumption and allowable sustainable yield during a drought period. So you've got these huge peaks, and it was because of something that they had in the map that construed something in the wrong way, right? As opposed to not having less water, it did the opposite where it says, well, we have availability of more water. So they fixed that problem. But that being said, that doesn't mean that everything you see in there you're going to like yet. I will tell you this, that at some point we're going to have to say, okay, the data we have is the data we have. I will talk to them about things and how they work, and I'll answer more questions or push things forward to them. But, you know, realistically, data is just the series of inputs that we have, and they're going to give us an output. So at some point, we're going to have to say, okay, this is as good as we're going to get and continue to chug. But we can give that stuff one more round and take a look and see where we can get. So other DM examples, you know, we looked at Madeira's. Just one thing before we start going down the road of talking about, you know, what's out there, what's sort of out there. From what I can see from approved plans and programs that have already gotten by DWR, pretty much all of them have some format baseline of allocation, right? That's sort of been what looks to be the case. There are some unsuccessful programs that are either down the probationary tract or are not yet passed by DWR that have other methodologies within them. But just to be, I just want to forewarn you that none of those, it appears, have been gotten DWR's blessing so far. So just be aware that as we have these discussions, obviously our goal is to have a program that's going to be accepted in the end. But obviously there are also exceptions here in Tama County that we have to talk about, but we just want to make sure that we delineate them very clearly when we have these talks about how we're going to move forward. Well, here's what those exceptions are and here's why, so that we can work on that stuff as we move forward.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What does the technical TM, you said technical memo, what's that look like? Is that an outline of a demand management plan?
It's going to be, you know, recommendations of what could believe to be successful, as I see it, recommendations of what could be successful within Tama County, and also things like their potential impact, right? So you're going to see, here's the recommendations of what could be potentially successful, and here's their potential impacts. Because ultimately, when you guys have to make decisions, you're going to want to take into account what your decision is going to cause, right? So I think those are the two key points of what the technical memorandum is going to look like. So that's what I see. And ultimately, the meeting that we have with them is going to discuss scope, right? So if there's something that you guys think in your head, hey, in a TM, we really need to have this, right? Then keep that for when we have that final discussion, because that will be important.
I think that was one of the things that we discussed with respect to the concept of using those funds, was wanting the scope of
it's got to come thing. Back.
It's got to be in the budget. What are they expecting to use? We weren't just interested in letting them have access to all the grant funds. We wanted to limit what that was and see what we're going to get for the spend. I guess one of my concerns is getting too deep into the thing and getting a lot of money tied up into a technical memorandum when really, again, we're working off of data that we question and a model that we question. So if they could be as general as possible and as, I don't want to say vague, but give an overview instead of something that's deep into the weeds. That's just my thought. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, more today, but you know, they've got to tell us what they've been doing and how much it's been costing in other sub-basins. If they're developing technical memos, they should have some sort of outline or scope.
Yeah.
They should be able to tell us instead of us necessarily.
And just to be clear, that data exists, right? We gave you this big, huge database of what exists in other areas and what has happened and where it's going. They can talk a little bit about cost, but it's really easy to go find what programs have been passed, right? Or even what ones are looking like they could be passed, right? Or in the works. But delineating what is there and what exists and sort of what that's going to look like in the end will be part of this discussion. And that we do, that's right, when we talk about the scope, developing the scope, they still owe CSAB first a discussion about that scope and what that's going to cost. So that's going to come out of this meeting that we have.
That is really, really helpful, though, Steve, to know during these discussions, like, where you would want the technical consultants to stay at high level in the information that goes into that technical memo, and where they should be delving into the details that's going to provide the information most important to you all. Other questions about the technical memo and the role of the technical consultant and kind of the anticipated scope and timeline.
I guess one of the things, at what point are we going to give, I guess, suggestions or wants or ideas about approaching, especially with the economic assessment? Like, you know, what is there an opportunity for input at this point? Are we looking for input at this point on what that assessment looks like? Or are we going to wait till February or later to try to give that, you know, help build that scope?
Yeah, I think a little bit of that will fall into our discussion today.
Okay.
Yeah. So sort of narrowing down that scope as much as we possibly can before they come in here is the most efficient use of their time, I think.
And a question on the next bullet point, sustainable yield estimates. So you indicated that they had changed some things. Were those changes substantive changes in the model used in the calculation, or did they just change the output?
They did not change the output. They changed the multiplier within the output.
And then that changed the output.
And it appeared to me as though that multiplier was causing a backwards gain in drought years. So it should have looked like this, and it looked like this. So I think how they put that in the model, and by the way, I didn't see every input to the model when they told me they fixed this. So I can't tell you right off the top of my head, this item in the model changed this. But from the data that I saw, that how much available water and how much sustainable yield went from this big peak to this farther down, which more represents a dry year. So because the opposite, you'd have less available water and less sustainable yield during a dry year. Not more available water and more sustainable yield during a dry year. So it looks like they had a factor in their upside.
Some of the concern was that it overestimated the amount of water used and in terms of ET or used groundwater use by pumpers.
That was part of that issue, right? It overestimated.
So there was errors in both directions, it sounds like.
Well, if you have a factor that takes dry years, right? So when there's less available water and puts it in upside down, it will skew it towards more use, right? More water available, more use. When you do it the other way, it skews it towards less use. So you'll see the numbers in there are less total volume pumped when you actually look at those as you go down the line. I agree that those numbers look really funky. During those periods of time,
all the stuff on the east side indicated that sustainable yield was a foot or less, I think, on some of those that I saw.
I think you're still going to see some of that, by the way.
That's just a bogus number then. I mean, to try and build a program on it is difficult at best for me.
I want to build on what you just, the last thing you just said. That's right, building a program on sustainable yield. I realize that it's something that we have to understand, but the way I've been looking at this from the very beginning is to address the overdraft number, not what sustainable yield is. Overdraft number is really weak, and I think how I look at this is there can be a more direct measurement. You know, we're looking at groundwater levels, basing it all on groundwater levels. It's a direct measurement criteria. It's part of our SMCs. And to me, that should be the driver as far as any demand management program. And not specific yield. I'm not advocating either way at this point, but overdraft number seems to be something more concrete we can get our arms around. So just want to put that out there.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's going to be the metric.
There's got to be something you can measure.
It's going to be something that's what the measure by which we're judged on the success of the program will be what are the groundwater levels.
It's got to be.
Are they continuing to decline or are they rebounding? That's what. So it'll.
I think the setting of a safe yield number based on the data is more about information about what's happening in a polygon, not necessarily about what you necessarily need to specifically regulate to.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you could compare them to each other. Hey, this one appears to be lower, this one appears to be higher, and you can have those discussions about where you want to put your set points, but that's information that you're using, not necessarily what you use to regulate it. You get those choices as we move forward. And I think you guys are both right that you need to have something that's visible that you look at as triggers, as requirements for reduction, et cetera, that are very easy to see. Otherwise, you're all going to get in arguments about what it means. That's a very good point.
Any other questions? Just that I missed this. So the timeline, you said that what we expect a possible scope from the technical consultants to be presented to the CSAB meeting in February?
We are going to have them meet with us and then with the Corning Group, one of each in those meetings, so that they can get scope input from both sides.
Sorry, when you say up, you mean staff
these
or
right
the...
Here. This group right here.
Okay.
In so the February meeting.
So February meeting, they come to here to talk about the draft scope, and then goes to, does it need to be approved by the Groundwater Commission?
Well, technically the answer is not until we get the input and the scope field together. And then those things will be brought over to the next board level, right? So CSAB, hey, this is based on the input that we got, this is the scope that we believe we need to come forward with. Here's what its potential costs are, right? And those things will have to be approved at those higher level of boards. So it's my goal to get a pretty, you know, tight scope together at this level before we go present that to the others.
When do we know? I forget. When does CSAB meet in?
Oh man, I'm on the spot.
Sorry. I know with the new year that all the things get kind of.
I don't think they have a February meeting.
I don't think they do.
I believe their first meeting though, this one's going to be in March.
March.
But don't quote me a date right off the top of my head because I may not. But I believe it's in March. But that actually fits well with the timing potentially.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So it could be where. Comes to this group to kind of talk about potential scope, could be giving an update to the Groundwater Commission at their February meeting. And then that aligns well with also bringing it to the CSAB in March. Okay, so that's the timeline for developing the scope. And am I missing this? Did we clarify exactly, you know, what's like number of meetings, number of presentations, like what will the technical consultants be doing for this group?
Yeah, to put together the scope, you get one meeting per. So to define that, get together the scope, and we're moving forward with costs. Because ultimately, we want to keep the costs of developing the scope as low as we can, particularly if we decide not to go that way. Right. So then it's wasted funds. But I think we can, in one meeting, come up with something that gives them a pretty decent direction to put scope together.
Okay. So that means one meeting for CSAB and one meeting for this work group.
One meeting for CSGSA.
CSGSA.
They have a demand management group as well. Okay. So each one of you will get a meeting with them to help develop scope. And then once that occurs, we can put something together as well.
I don't think they've done anything.
They haven't, yeah. So they're going to have that discussion. It might take them longer. We'll see.
Maybe some materials ahead of time would be really a good idea.
Yeah, so I'm concerned that it's dragging into 3 months now before we even got a technical memo.
All right, let's go.
Scope. I mean, it just, we could be June before we get something to get us rolling here. And this is the reason we wanted this was to get a little focus in this group and decide which direction you're trying to go.
I really hope it's not slow.
Yes. We've been on this since November.
Correct.
Can we get an idea of what the consultants think this will take as far as, you know, time requirements. And knowing that, maybe we can try to fast track our meeting schedule on our end, you know, to get this some movement, quicker movement on it. I know that's a pain, you know, to organize special meetings with something like this. But.
Yeah. I guess the only thing that I was, and by the way, I think that having a meeting that's earlier or later, we can decide when our meetings are. We can have it earlier in February. It's totally cool. I don't think that's a problem. I think that it's my perception that once we all sort of get to this point where we say, okay, we have all the data that we can have. We've picked it apart. We're at this spot, right? Now we have some input from a sub-consultant on what the possibilities and where we're going to go with this thing are. You know, the reality is that there aren't an infinite number of possibilities, right? And so once we get this thing kind of like this, right, it's going to come together a lot faster than you think, or at least that's my feel and hope, right? That it's going to sort of get, it's just going to keep going like this. And eventually we're all just going to get to this point where we say, okay, there's two options, even if it's two or three options. Hey, we have two or three options. Let's go for some of these boards. You know what I mean? And get their input on which one to go with and then start developing programmatic language.
You know, and just, and I know you know this, Justin, I think, you know, looking over the material that you and Stephanie have generated already, you know, as far as defining the different demand management options and that matrix table that you guys developed, I think all this feeds into the technical memorandum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So whatever we can do, you know, on this end that can feed into that process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately, so I think we're already.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this a little bit today, but I really want like you guys to say, hey, look, we really don't like this. We really do like this. You know what I mean? These sort of like thoughts of, hey, you know, this is not, let's just kick that out the door right now. You know what I mean? Or let's say we could probably do something like that. Let's have some talks about that today so that we can help them come a little pre-prepared. So, I mean, we all know that there's stuff that we don't want to do under Tim County, I'm sure. So, and I'll, there's a few little bits of rule tidbits I'll tell you about as we move through this too.
Question on the data that you sent out on the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So, if this is revised, so last time we went through that LM1U.
Yes.
Polygon. So I'm looking at it now because I remember the numbers from then.
Yeah.
So for reference, if I look on here, it says the average safe yield, so from 2014-23, says it's 310 acre feet. Mm-hmm. That's got farther off base, 2,846 acres are irrigated in the sub-basin with 310 acre feet, which is a tenth of an acre foot per acre.
Isn't that falling off?
Yeah, and that would be by the Sacramento River, just north of Los Molinos. So to me, that's gone dramatically farther up the deep end.
We actually... Because of that peaking, we actually reduce the amount of water available, so that flattens it out. It actually does; it will skew your safe yields down. And
but I mean that number there should be maybe 10,000 acre feet of the safe yield. That polygon is 300.
And that's something that we're going to have to talk about when we talk about the data. But I'm going to tell you, if you look at the inputs back here, it's using changes in groundwater level to come up with changes in groundwater storage, which creates a acre foot number for that change in groundwater storage, right? If you dropped this many feet in 1 year, right, that's how many acre feet you went over. And so that's a relatively realistic number, just to be clear.
Now, realistic as far as calculation, but practicality is not even anywhere near.
I know what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. And there might be some scenario by which we talk about, hey, we need to put some factor in for dry year calculations when you're getting those safe yield drops, you know, something of that nature. We can have those conversations, but.
Yeah, but even on the wet years, what it's showing here, on the wet years, it only got up to a safe yield of 1,900 acre feet, which is, it's not going to work. I mean, yeah, starting at that point, we're not even on the same map. A tenth of an acre foot, so you can apply two inches of water a year in irrigation. You see what I'm saying? I mean, we could debate it if it was what, 2.5 feet, and it's like, wait a minute, there's no way. There's got to be at least five feet or more sustainable yield in that polygon.
Mm-hmm.
So are you telling me that there's no way being that far off? I mean, that's not minor tweaks. We're not even in the realm of realities. I mean, we can't even use any of this because if it's like that there, I can't trust it on one of these other numbers. Some of these numbers, I would probably guess if you asked me blindfolded in this polygon, what would I guess the sustainable yield? And I look at, you know, that sounds reasonable. But when I come back on some of these others that far off.
Point those out to me. If you really, like, in your sense of, you know what I mean, you guys have a way better sense of this than I do right off the cuff. I don't look at every single area. You are an agriculturalist in that area.
I don't think we can either.
But if there's a tenth of 2 inches of applied water along, you know, in that polygon, I think
on the river, that is that. If there's specific ones,
hold off.
Point them out to me, and I'll dive into that data with them and see if I
can
figure it out. Yeah,
there's one.
Shoot me an email that says, "Hey, look, LN01, that one looks jacked. This one looks jacked. This one looks jacked." If I get those N of them or whatever they are out of you guys, because it's hard for me to conceptualize it in the same way, right? You know what I'm saying?
No, I respect that. I guess my challenge is on that. If that one's that far off, how do I trust any of them?
That's a problem I have.
Even if it looks reasonable, I'd like to pull this out of the sky.
Yeah, go ahead.
We discussed this one, this polygon last.
Yeah, I think Brendan brought it up. That's why I
heard it thoroughly.
Yeah.
We haven't even begun to get it all the rest of them. We don't know what. I don't have any confidence after looking at this one. What they're coming up with has any basis in reality.
And so, once again, I just wanted to reiterate the point of this is data. You can use it to compare basin to basin. But the reality is that I would recommend, and I know this input has been given by others, that you set your regulatory requirements on physical things that you can measure. And that gets rid of the confusion, right? It says that, hey, if the groundwater is falling this much in a year, you take this at, this is the action, whatever that is. It's a physical thing that is measurable.
What's the overdraft number that was submitted for the Los Pinos Subbasin for reference?
You want me to bring up the data viewer or?
It might not be.
I could date fine.
I mean, we can search through the plan, but I think it's significantly small.
Yeah,
it is overdraft, but it is small. It's really small.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking 12,000 acre feet. That's.
I think it may not yet.
Okay.
Mass.
So anyway, so that this is off by 10,000 acre feet and a 9,000 acre polygon. And I mean, I think our overdraft number in there is probably, I don't know what it is. I know it's less than 5,000 acre feet. But anyway, and that whole sub-basin.
You know, I may apologize. I should maybe focus on Los Molinos sub-basin. But I've ignored it completely. To me, it's, you know, we don't have significant issues there.
You know, I'm just using it for an example. Is one that the numbers should show us a safe yield. If it's roughly in balance, the safe yield should parallel about what the irrigators are using, right? As a check. That's easier to check than, say, a Corning sub-basin, because there's areas of it that have significantly higher others. There's a lot of variability in the Corning sub-basin, so right?
In this one, is there surface water? Is there surface water in there?
If there is, it's extremely small amount. It hugs the river. Todd, there would Los Pinos Mutual.
Yeah. How far down does that one? I don't know.
Should say it here if there's surface water.
Oh, yeah, it's farther over.
Yeah.
It's a good example. We're going to go back and look at this stuff. We need to kind of have an understanding.
I think at least a whole...
Oh, there you go. Pull it up. Can you switch the map? Oh, you have a good map view. Can you do the hybrid view so then Todd knows where that district is?
No, apparently it took you all the way out here. I'm sorry.
To the base map, I guess, to a hybrid.
Yeah, it does. It actually has a fair amount.
Hybrid, this one?
Yeah, then he can get an idea where that. I think that, isn't that the one we talked about last time, Todd?
Last time we talked about LM6.
Oh, okay. I thought it was LM1.
So it has 6,000-7,000 acre foot of applied surface water in this numbers. And so that's probably, so that's part of going to be part of that scheme.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. You're pumping less and service watering more.
Okay. I guess I got to dig into that, but still 300 acre feet of sustainable yield there.
Yeah. And I would have to look at
it's still 100 fold off.
Mm-hmm.
What's
LM6?
Because
groundwater is what LM6 says. That's meant to do with what we talked about last time for continuity of people to have a memory of it. What does it say? The
I just wanted to double check. Todd was asking to close the pump. So.
Yeah, so when you have water out,
so like your irrigated crop acres 2023, 921.
You on LM6?
Averaging at about, 4,000 acre foot per year surface water. On those 900 total irrigated crop acres.
That would mean to me that sustainable yield is even higher yet.
Well,
depends on groundwater levels.
It depends on ground level.
It does.
And it does have a falling groundwater. I mean, not steep, but a falling groundwater level.
Probably along the river have to do something different because the groundwater levels are low there only when they're at whatever the river level is. So when the river's running low, the groundwater's low. When the river's high, the ground it's somewhat low. I realize it's not that way all the way to the foothills, but a good chunk of that.
Yeah, and that same comment that we have about talking about how we are going to about to go to embark on a scenario where we start talking about how pumping affects all that water in the river, water level in the river, and how the water level river affects pumping, and so that. Realistically, we have to be cautious of saying, hey, it's only just the water of the river, because that is directly saying that you're pumping water out of the river when you do that. And that's has its own issues.
It's recharging.
It does.
So what's LM6 then, just quickly, to see how much improvement we've made after Ludorf went through it. So LM6 has how many irrigated acres? 900 irrigated. Okay. And what's the safe yield on that?
Did you say that had been updated with the new?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. You've got it right here, LM6. So that's the old. Let's see how much you changed it. So LM6 is, come on,
you know, I've scrolled out now. It's scrolled in or something.
No, there's LM1, so do you see LM6?
Yeah, 10.
Is it still 900?
You keep going a little more.
Go one more. Change.
5. So it's one of those unfavorable ones.
909.
But I looked at the one that was 934 irrigated acre, so I think I got the right one.
And that was almost the same field. So I moved it. Nice. So,
yeah, now I'm off it. There should be a tab that tells us unknown. Well, can you click on the square, the little teeny square that's in the middle of LM6 there? See that guy? 26
NO6.
Oh, 6 NO2. And then 26 NO2 14 or 26 NO2 29?
29.
All right. Well, that's this one.
So,
that's it.
My uncle's sending me. Because that's the most important thing. I'm just seeing if
so 18 is looking at. Perfect. Sorry, I'm getting used to how slapped on here.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that you brought them.
I just wanted before we leave, have an idea of what changes have been made. So if we, I think we're going to have to dive into this before we come back again.
All right. So safe yield here is a negative number. So it is so because we've had an overall fall in groundwater there, the average safe yield there
is negative 32.
And that's because we've had a drop in groundwater.
And you have a negative.
Yeah. That's negative versus what is already pumped, right? So you're talking about in order for it to come back to the, let me look at this really quick. Yeah, negative 3.1 change in groundwater level. In other words, you have to add water to it in order to stop the fall.
3.1 feet of fall in 11 years. From 2014 to 2023, 9 years, I guess.
Yeah, average change is 0.31 per year.
So the safe yield is a negative number. So if you had a demand management program that went off a safe yield, it would not only say you got a decreased pumping, but you can't pump.
Yeah, this is saying that you have more surface water use than groundwater use, and you still have a falling groundwater level. And so that way, that's how you get a negative yield. That's the only way.
So that a pumper that was pumping in that sub-basin, what does that mean?
Or not well, in that polygon. It means whatever you come up with in the future. But right now, it means that that thing is overdrafted, and you would have to add more water to the system or remove 100% of groundwater pumping in order to become sustainable.
I see. I get it. Thank you. I mean, I was with Ian on that. How can you have a negative safe yield?
But you can because there's more surface water than groundwater application. So it should be, it should technically be rising all the time.
There is no basically safe yield. You're going to, if you're pumping, you're in decline.
You're in decline.
If you didn't have a surface
water. That's a rare bird, by the way. Not very, there are very few negatives. But that's one of those rare birds where you have a declining groundwater level with lots of surface water application.
Interesting.
This number looks right to me. When I look at the actual numbers, it looks right to me. If you have a high groundwater, surface water, low groundwater, and you still have a declining number, that would indicate that you are in the negative.
So I would say that I don't think you can't have a negative safe yield. So the safe yield is zero.
It's zero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. One of the richest groundwater areas that we're looking at. Telling us that we can't pump
that.
But that number is based off of current pumping, right? So we have to make up. What was it? Negative
132.
132 negative feet per year.
So we, with existing pumping, if we reduce that by 132 acre feet, we would.
No, you can't pump anything at all.
Or 132 acre feet beyond what's currently pumped. So you'd have to have zero and then minus 132, then bring another 132 acre
feet. So be sustainable, you got to stop all groundwater pumping and add 132 acre feet to the ground annually to be sustainable.
Intuitively.
Well, but if you do have that much surface water and you still have a grounding water pump, that makes sense. I get why it says that. That's how that map plays out for a reason. But like I said, that's an extremely rare bird. That's not going to buy
it. Well, that LM1 didn't look a whole lot different.
But it doesn't have a negative.
It's right. Still a sea salt groundwater pumping in the richest area that we got to see, the groundwater. That's what you said, your words.
But I get it. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just telling you. But that map right there looks very funny to me. And when I actually look at every one of those lines, and you guys can look at them, look at it. You have high surface water application, low groundwater total pumping, and a falling groundwater level. That's how you get that math. That makes sense. And if you base things on groundwater level, by the way, you're still going to see that same issue as the outcome because you have an average falling groundwater level. So that means a restriction on pumping in a place where you have tons of groundwater.
And we're maybe getting ahead of ourselves here because we don't know what our SMCs will be or are in that area. So we may not be reaching our SMCs or minimum thresholds. For a very long time.
Yes.
So it's almost like a non-issue. As long as we have surface water, feeding that area.
Which is, that's getting taken away.
That's why I bring it up.
you can't kick a can down the road per se to say, well, it's not going to be a problem for a while because it's going to just wipe everything out.
And also, I'd caution you guys about saying, hey, we don't need to do anything about this for a long time, because then you give people the idea that everything's fine, and when you do put in a restriction, it causes people harm. They can't plan for it.
But right? It does reflect.
We should be fairly straightforward about, hey, in the future, it looks like there's going to be an action here.
I definitely think so. And what it does is reflect on the value of applied water, surface water, you know, in that area, and, you know, what that area might be experiencing with the new fish and wildlife flows requirements, if whenever that materializes, if they're, you know. So that it's, okay, it's a heads up.
There will be no farming from Los Molinos to Red Bluff on that side of the river once they're successful on removing the surface water use under this scenario. Because nobody will be able to pump all your recharge will go away. The best smell test very well.
I guess I want to move forward from this topic.
But I just wanted to make sure, so when it gets posted, that people can look at it and the next time we meet.
But I just want to say one more thing, just to be clear. That math is not funky math.
No, I hear you.
It comes to that for a reason.
Oh, yeah. You need to change the formula.
But the inputs and how you guys choose to do that can be a different animal.
Yeah.
But that math is not wrong math. It's right math. It's just that because of how much surface water there is, it skews it in that way. And it makes sense that it would. So
you're talking about, when you say that math, you're talking about in the spreadsheet.
That spreadsheet's mathematics that's using change in groundwater level, application of surface water, pumping of groundwater to come up with a determination of how much you would have in sustainable yield. And there's a multiplier in there for the transience of water, right? That SY, that transience of water that we talk about.
I got some concerns. So I looked at, there's three polygons that I'm familiar with locally in Corning Subbasin. And yes, there's some modification. But first, let me say the version control sucks. You got to do a better job on that, because a file coming out, same name, same everything, and yet you got different numbers. So what's going on?
Version 1, 2, 3, you mean each update? You talk about when it's updated.
I'll put that one in. I agree.
Do something to differentiate.
You got in the file name. How's that?
Right.
You could do a date. You could do whatever in the file name. But, you know, this thing of just putting stuff out there and it's materially different, but everything else is identical. I mean, that as far as naming convention and everything else, that's a problem. That's just not going to work for me anyway.
Oh, I know. I understand.
Okay. So comparing the December 17th spreadsheet that Eddie had sent out, I don't know if everybody got that or not, and comparing that to the January 21st one, the applied groundwater in, I looked at the three polygons I'm familiar with, looks more reasonable. Is it right? I have no idea, but it isn't grossly wrong like it was earlier, okay? But looking at the numbers for the change in storage and water level, they don't change. So I can't see how that could happen, that you could have such a difference in applied groundwater and have no change in storage. Somebody can explain to me.
The change in storage doesn't have anything to do necessarily with applied groundwater. It's about groundwater levels. The change in storage uses level to determine how much water was taken out of the system. Right? So when you drop a foot, it's an acre foot across the whole thing. With the SY put in for transients of water. But essentially, if you think of it this way, you pull a foot of water out of there, the area that's covered by that well is so many acres, that's how much acre foot you dropped. Multiply those two things together with the factor in it.
With what?
The SY factor. The transient. I call it the transients of water factor, but it's not really that. It's a It's a math. It's math about how water moves within that area.
And so it's accounting for porosity. In and out water, porosity. Aside from transient being flow through.
Correct. Movement of water.
Yeah.
In and out.
Yeah. And that influences your storage.
Absolutely.
So it's not just about what's pumped. You can't just take the decline.
Pumping is not.
And say that's all pumping, because it's not. It's influenced by outside. That's what I mean.
Pumping is not in the math to change of storage. That's why it doesn't change it. Pumping only affects sustainable yield mathematics. When you're talking about change in storage, it's just using groundwater levels.
Say it again.
Are there particular polygons you want?
I have 32, 23, 22.
All right.
32, 23,
and
what's the other
one?
32, 23,
and
22. Okay. Probably. Coupe and going to the northwest. So
very bottom. Just find one to the right.
There you go. County line.
Yeah, right through there, the cloth through there, and the 22, it's about more than half of it is not developed.
Okay. Oh, underneath by the acres.
You know what the safe yield was on that?
Offhand, I don't.
Should be able to look at it.
Did the safe yield change with the new numbers?
So 2,400 acre feet.
Less than acre foot. That's because it's in decline.
But that's over.
If you're going to do a allocation, any time with the number then.
So
it's not one acre.
Well, beyond that, how are you going to deal with fluctuation? Because down in that area, 30 to 40 feet fluctuation spring to fall is not uncommon at all. Yeah. In fact, it's normal.
Yeah.
And so if you look at the hydrograph or say 23 or 32, you're banging the MDs with normal fluctuation. And it's been that way, I live in 32. It's been that way since we moved there in 1990. It's not really, there may be a little more fluctuation, but it's generally 30 feet at least. So how are you going to deal with that?
The way I would deal with it, and I know this is very simplistic, but I'm looking at that rate of decline. So my rate of decline was 1.9 feet. That's over in whatever our criteria is. If I maintain that rate of decline over a 5-year period, then I have exceeded the undesirable result for that area. So, 1.9 feet, that's what I'm losing on average every year. I can calculate what my overdraft is.
You're talking about it in your area.
No, I'm looking at that poly.
Okay.
I can calculate what my overdraft is every year. Therefore, and I don't know what that would be, just for the sake of argument, let's say it's 100 acre feet. Okay. Then I somehow, to affect that change, to affect that rate of decline, I have to somehow back off 100 acre feet.
Okay. Or add another 100 acre feet in.
Okay.
One or the other.
Whatever. Yeah. And so that's how I think about this. It's like, I'm just based on that groundwater. Now, what I think gets complicated is what am I willing to accept the county as to a transition period to deal with that rate of decline? I'm not going to hit that rate of decline in 1 year. I'm not going to try. At least that's what I suggest that we not try to affect this all at once. I know we're all on the same page on that.
Number of mouse.
So it's like, so transition period, so incrementally, I'm going to try to hit that. I'm going to try to affect that rate of decline to get it below an undesirable result. That's how I've been looking at this.
I think that, you know, it's a valid way of looking at it, but when you have these large swings, okay.
I don't mind that.
I know, yeah. But, you know, what prompted...
We're talking the annual swings here.
What prompted a lot of this is, you know, you have the domestic wells going dry because you're going below the MT, right? So you're still going to have that.
I agree. And that's why in theory, eventually we have a well mitigation program that hopefully will address that. But I think as long as I'm not... You know, exceeding my minimum. Well,
if our low is set in a place where we're still having that issue, where your lows are going between your MT, your swing's gotten really, really out of whack, though.
Even in this zone,
even in this area, right? Where if our goal is ultimately to get back to that MO, right? Long term. If we, yes, there might be problems in between, and you might get down in those places, but you're going to be back here. If we're swinging that low during when we're at our MO average, we've got something crazy going on. You know what I mean? You're never going to have that much swing.
Crazy in what way?
Likely that would tells be me is a massive amount of pumping with a massive amount of natural discharge.
You've got a good aquifer.
Well, I think it's fine. Yeah. But you're talking about those swings.
Pull up.
No, I don't have those swings. I mean, as long as we're not exceeding the MT.
As long as you're not exceeding the MT.
And even when we are.
You know, we're recovering. Yeah. You know, those hydrographs are showing recovery.
That's not
a good one. I mean, the one we had, I mean, Bill's well's ideal as far as seeing the swing and seeing the MTs get hit, but seeing recovery every year.
But if you're looking, the thing that we're talking about here is this distance, right? If your average is up here, that distance does not matter to this line. They will never, ever intersect each other. If this distance gets, your amplitude gets this big, that's still an overpumping issue, right? That's whether or not it's good aquifer. That means that you're pumping so much out during the dry season, and even if it does naturally recover, that you're causing undesirable results by going below your MT. And that's where you run. That's what I think we're talking. That's what I mean by something really crazy is going on. That's a huge amplitude to recover from. And even though it does recover, your pumping is still causing that issue to get you below the MTs. And you're going to get some serious grief by those that regulate us if you do that. I would put that out there.
Well, I think we're going to experience that. And it's, and that's.
In the short term, yes, 100%. Yeah. Just not the long term.
I think there will be pretty serious ramifications to try and change something that's been going on for.
No, the amplitude can stay the same. The amplitude can stay the same. That is not what we're trying. That's not even what we're talking about changing. It's where the middle of that amplitude is, up or down.
Yeah, I understand.
That's a problem. That line represents a dropping average, not a change in amplitude.
Well, there's both there.
I mean, I would argue
one that amplitude gets larger.
They both exist, but that's not what that line
is representing. So what's the concerning part is where the low point is.
Well, let's change the line. I mean, up until the first below normal year, you could make the argument that it was gaining.
You know, it's always going to gain during wet years and always fall during dry years.
I'm talking about that. You know, this was my whole issue with the way the decline was defined. Because it's totally dependent on what years you pick.
Oh, it is.
Huh?
100%. We've got one time direction we're using is heavily impacted by a drought.
Yeah.
So they're all
right.
Please keep in mind that we aren't the ones that set that. It was a requested change. right? We all sat, for those of you who sat in those meetings and listened, that was a, I don't want to say requirement, we'll call it suggestion from those who are going to approve or disapprove us. That changing that duration like that. Originally, we have that duration in over 20 years.
Right.
Right. And that's where I'm trying to tell you is we still have to be acceptable in the end. We have to work within the parameters that are given us. Yes, I agree. What's coming is sucks. That's not what I'm, I totally agree with you. I'm just saying we got to figure out some way to work, address that commentary that was given to us so we can be successful.
Yeah.
Success, in my point of view, is getting an approved plan and moving down a road that doesn't burn everybody's house down.
But, yeah, I want to double check. We're looking at the polygon, is it 20?
22. Wait, that, actually, you're in the wrong well there. Back up, please. You want to go above 4.
With
30 deuce, CO 30 deuce, the polygon. Mm-hmm. But the
hit the little arrow, see it, hit the bar, hit the arrow, yeah, and you get to the other wells.
Right there. Now go down. Now look at it.
This.
So that's which I don't think we've ever fully defined it or said that. We're generally interested in the shallow aquifer, right, for these controls.
So that's an interesting commentary, too. I think that anybody would tell you that if you have a continuously falling groundwater level, whether it's shallow or deep, it would be a problem. That's my understanding.
Well,
ultimately,
all we've been looking at is shallow for the most part.
Yes, it's been the primary control. Agreed, it's been the primary
control. That's true, because it's the most vocal and obvious one for domestic pumps.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, so I'm asking. So we're looking at all the various...
every one of them has an MO and MT, regardless of whether they're shallow or deep. And ultimately, if you get into the MTs, even in a deep well, you are going to get a negative response. Right there, and say, sorry, you went your NPs, you got to fix it. So, yes, I agree with you that the focus should be on protecting the reason for having this in place, which is to keep people having access to water. So, shallow offers. I'm with you on that. I understand. But I'm just telling you, we have MOs and MTs for the deep ones. If we start exceeding those MTs, there's still going to be a problem.
Yeah. So, like I said, in this case, you can see the swings on the back. And you can also see that... depending on your choice of the spring groundwater level years, through a lot of that, it's increasing.
Yep.
Certainly there's a rebound in those wet years there. It looks like around, 16 and, or I can't read it from there. 15 and 16, those wet years, the peaks bounced back pretty nicely. Yeah, 16 and 18. And if you looked at just those 2 years, then yeah, it's an increasing trend.
Yeah, but they're wanting us to look at this 10-year period.
Right.
In the dashed and red lines, the MT, right?
Yes, sir.
So are you suggesting, Ian, that the MT should be deeper there?
I'm suggesting that this is going to be problematic, not just here. Essentially the MDs were not realistic.
MT is not the ball low. It's not defined as the ball low on a single given year. That's not, undesirable results is not defined as
undesirable ball low results.
And ultimately, we are governed. Yes, you want to avoid your MT. And yes, your goal is to get to your MO, but your avoidance structure is for undesirable results. Does that make sense?
But breaking the MT repeatedly is an undesirable result.
At some point, it will be an undesirable result, but not just touching it one time or something of that nature. That isn't immediately off response necessarily.
But in that particular one, you pretty much touched
it. That's not what you want.
At least I hope that's not what you want, because I wouldn't want to manage that personally.
Oh, I'm not saying that's what I want. I'm just looking at the hydrographs, looking at the numbers, thinking about, you know, the practicality of some of what's going on and what has gone on traditionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you're talking about as far as, you know, the other polygon and, okay, well, it's some of the best groundwater around, and now we're saying, you know, you can only
put 2 inches. Which well are we on there?
Sorry, I just like double checking.
23 and 02. 04 is the shallow one.
Let's look at what this data looks like. Fun. This is Corning.
So I think this is helpful for the technical consultants to be hearing an understanding of the curved polygon, what's going on in that polygon, what's happening with the groundwater, what have you been actually observing, what have you tried, what have you done in terms of usage or tried in terms of like conservation, demand management, those various things, for them to better understand what's going on, what have you tried, what do you think could be tried in these areas is going to be helpful for them to understand for pulling that information for you all. So as much information you can provide of, you know, what you know from your own experiences, and then when you're seeing this data, what are you taking from it for them to understand?
Yeah, I think a couple of comments. One, there's no soft surface water available on any of those polygons. Okay. Two, 32 is built out. 23 is mostly built out. 22, I guess you could, you know, build out further west. It's about half built out. And there have in 23 and 22. On the timeline we're talking about, there has been a lot of fallow ground that's gone into orchards.
Absolutely. That was my comment, was in our area today, that we're both real familiar with. We've definitely seen more development from dry land to irrigated ammons generally. And even some of the formerly irrigated ground that was pasture was intermittently and poorly irrigated, I would say. It probably wasn't irrigated to full ET.
Yeah,
so a lot of
depends on where.
Right. So I can think of a few that were pretty shallow.
We're 100 acre feet over. And let's see if I can find a sustainable. I need to make a scroll header on this thing that
I'm kind of with Michael though on this issue. If we're 100 acre feet over on there, then it's pretty. Right? Say we're 100 acre feet over on 1,000 irrigated acres, and then everybody's got to cut back a tenth of a foot.
That's not a big, it's a manageable scenario.
That is. I mean, that's something we can, okay, I know I can put on 2 or 3 less inches on a 3 foot irrigation year. I can get by.
Yeah, I think where the next question is, how are you going to enforce it?
Yeah. Well,
if people do it.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what this plan, that's the plan, is how are we going to enforce that, right? And so this brings up a good point. I just want to make a point about something. So the county of Tehama, the voters of the county of Tehama in 1987 passed a voter initiative that disallows the metering of wells.
Went through the
California Supreme Court, by the way, and stood.
Oh,
wow.
Okay.
So that's an ordinance?
So it would be voluntary.
It's a voter initiative.
It'd be voluntary.
So you have to volunteer. If you're going to do it based on metering, that has to be voluntary. You can't mandate metering. Or at least from everything I'm seeing, that's out.
So obviously back then, people were saying we don't want meters on any of our wells that far back.
Yeah, that far back. there was discussion about metering then. Yeah. If you remember, there was a period of time in the 80s that was that long drive. This is 87, so it's right in the middle of that long drive. So there's probably some discussion about that back then. And the voter issue passed it. Made it not possible.
And I would say generally that sentiment continues even today.
Absolutely.
The old saying, you know, that which they can measure, they'll tax us on it. They'll fee us on it if we put meters on. I have meters on three of my wells.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for my own use. Yeah. And so if you're going to ask for a reduction and a measurable reduction, I think you'd have to make a carrot rather than a stick. With that's respect right. to that, if give a guy an incentive to say, okay, yeah, I can cut back and I'll show you where I cut back. We'll put a meter on this well and I'll show you where I can redo.
And may I make a suggestion about how that could work? Go ahead. Just to be plain, is if you incentive works two ways, right? Obviously, no matter what, you have to have the money to give the incentive, right? I mean, let's just be honest. That doesn't come from nowhere. So it works two ways. Incentive is either you have a series of fees that pay towards an incentive, right? Or you have avoidance of a fee as an incentive. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
And so if you can set up a regulatory process like this, does not have to be, we are going to allocate you more acre feet. It can be, we are going to say, that whatever, almonds take 3.4, right? And that's your statutory baseline. If you can prove to us that you're using less than 3.4, then you can get a fee avoidance. And there can be multiple methodologies to do that, by the way. It doesn't have to be just one, right? It can be through ED. It can be through voluntary metering programs. There's other ways to do this than just one thing. So, it can even be through electrical use from public, right? Reduction in your PG&E meter bill says, hey, look, I'm 10% down.
Well, yeah. You don't have access to the PG&E.
It would have to be voluntary. We're talking about voluntarily. But otherwise you get the fee. So it's kind of voluntarily. Does that make sense? Either prove it or you get the fee, one way or the other. But if that is incentivizes a behavior by reducing the cost. And so and it requires much less sort of thought of restriction, right? Lot less mandatory action. And people get to make decisions in given years about how they want to deal with these things and what they want to do. And yes, it might cost them more money, but right, it doesn't put them out of business if they can't water their profit at all dies. You know, there's all these different methodologies you go down. But it does have its positives. I don't know that it exists exactly like that anywhere, but we do have a very different animal here than many other places. So these aren't water districts everywhere that are just basically totally in control of their own GSPs, you know what I mean, which is most of what you're seeing when you see the allocation bits is a GSA that is a water district creating an allocation. Boy, that's easy for them to do. They roll their costs into their fees. They say, sorry, you only get this much. They have all that control of the world. We have less of that here. And I think people prefer to have choices here.
So one scenario maybe that I can envision here, I'm not saying this is advocating for this, but it would be a per acre foot extraction fee.
Mm-hmm.
That assumes if you're not going to meter your well and show us the usage,
it's this
that we're going to assume that it matches ED and that varies per year. But on average, maybe three and a half acre foot a year for almonds, for walnuts, and maybe it's costing you $5 a foot in the fee, and you can avoid that if you meter and show us it's less.
That's right. And those, I mean, we'll use the word.
I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying that's a potential.
That's a potential option, right? And you don't have to call it mitigation. It could be efficiency measures can get you there. You know, there's a lot of places where you can get 10% of an efficiency like that. I mean, yes, it will cost money to do it. No question, that's true. But a change can make that happen. Even things like, you know, soil moisture monitoring for irrigation output can make
this as expensive as it is to pump and irrigate right now. Most guys are already
they're getting
doing
out
a
there.
Lot of these things that we talk about saying for conservation measures, they're already in place.
Well, I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm not going to tell you who this is or even where this is, but I have seen now 5 different well filtration setups that have continuously back flushing bypass. That's hundreds of acre feet per year going down a ditch. Retard. Yeah. Yeah.
Show up for
something. I mean, so simple as something like that, where you have a recovery system on those. Right, that's a huge amount of water that someone can save, and it's really not that expensive. So, I mean, there are still room for these out there. These things still exist.
I'm not saying there isn't. I'm, you know, when I look at this, I'm trying to think it all the way through as far as the practicality of, not only what you're doing, but how you're going to actually fairly, enforce it, et cetera. So what's the bottom threshold where it's not worth dealing with?
10 acres? Yeah, that's something we'll have to talk about. Yeah.
But I think we can get that. The deal?
Well, if you look at, you know, a lot of even the State Water Resources Control Board that have, as far as what they're implementing, there's usually a minimum threshold. Like I think in one I saw it was 500 acre feet. Anybody below that, you know,
the cost of doing it is
didn't report anybody above that did.
That has everything to do with how much the fee is as well, right? So you got to do that math a little bit. That's math we can just come up with that says here's how much it costs to administer the program per acre foot, and here's how much the fee is. So how many acre foot limits that? Where do you want that to come up? That is a doable scenario.
I'm trying to do a time check because we have about 30 minutes left to just have, on this general topic. And one of the very, very distinct things that we're hoping to get out of the conversation is understanding what are the top topics you are interested in, that you would like the technical consultants to kind of like do a little bit more, bring back more information. So if it's like examples related to how they have, others have been dealing with this. Okay, can't have metering for everything. So what are others doing when your only option is to use some sort of proxy or, you know, using ET as a way to address and estimate usage and possibly, you know, charge for usage when you don't always have metering available? Those are some of the, like, better understanding what you're interested in and is going to be really, really key for the tech consultants.
Jeopardy theme song?
Justin, I mean, like, do you have
here's the game.
A full list.
Let's talk about this a little bit, sort of, you know, one-on-one. You know, mandatory options, right? Here's the list. You guys ready for this? Groundwater allocations, usage-based fees, pumping restrictions, land use restrictions. Anybody got some in-out votes on those items?
I, you know, really want them to elaborate, build on, consider all the options we've identified in this table. I don't, or we as a group, decide not to address some of these things.
That's what I'm asking. Are there any of these that you want to kick out the door now to make this more simplistic?
Or at least
I don't
less
qualified to make the call at this point. You know, to be honest with you.
Go ahead.
It was more like, are there things, having a better sense of like things that you think are really, really important that, and we've kind of been hearing, like, for instance, allocation frameworks have been generally accepted by the state. So that is, I think, one of the prominent ones that definitely the information that the consultants can provide, allocations is an example. If there are other program elements that in general are kind of falling either way at the top or kind of or falling to the bottom, that gives the consultants a general sense of like you know, all right, we don't have to spend a lot of time researching X, Y, Z. So
if you guys want to know what allocations look like and their effect on communities, that data exists in spades. We have been adjudicating basins. I mean, since 09, we're talking like this has been around forever, right? So allocations, restrictions, and their effect on communities is supremely out there, right? And it's that data way, way, way exists. So just, you know, if we're just talking about something that anybody wants to look at, that's something that all of us can look at. If one Google search will get you there all day. So
allocations, following, you know, and I guess based on what you just said, you know, I don't want, because all those data exists, you know, on allocations, right. Doesn't mean that we don't need to have this in our tech on order.
No, they can just give you the quick little rundown. Just a quick little rundown.
I'm just saying, because we have to me, the technical memorandum is the foundation. I always said this, but for whatever the county decides to do, so whatever direction we're going, I think it has to be addressed in the TEM. But I think some of these, when I look at these, they're, as an example, dry farming, land use change incentives, land repurposing. I think these are outcomes of certain demand management measures. You know, so I'm not sure that they have to be addressed per se. It's not something that we would advocate for or require changes in land use.
That's why I read you the mandatory ones. Because really, I mean, let's be honest.
So yeah, allocations. Yeah, even though well restrictions, I think we're against some problems. That doesn't mean, you know, that also includes groundwater pumping. Then we have pumping restrictions underneath well restrictions. I mean, I think it's allocation, well restrictions, pumping restrictions, fouling. And I think fouling, again, is a natural, I mean, it's a natural result, I think, of a lot of this. And so how do we incentivize that? I mean, those are things that I don't think we can require fouling without giving incentives to do so. And so what does that look like?
Yeah. In my opinion, the only way that you can do that, there's only two ways to do that. Either you have a high fee and you pay money back into the incentivization program, or you have a lower fee and you use fee avoidance to instigate.
Well, again, the fee structure, even though it's not something I favor, but it's, we have to discuss it. We have to look at it. And that was the last item on this table. But, I just because I don't like it doesn't mean we can ignore it, you know, because I think this is really an important aspect that we need to discuss and feel out. And yeah, so I don't know if I can summarize what I just said, but yes, there are key demand management options for us.
And so can we at least agree that for when we're talking about mandatory actions, right, that these four items right here are the items that we should be looking at as mandatory actions?
You're talking about these?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they are groundwater allocations, usage-based fees, pumping restrictions, and land use restrictions. And just to be clear, this agency cannot impose land use restrictions. That would have to be done through the planning commission.
Well, I think following it is in itself program.
Well, that's a land use restriction. You'd be if you make mandatory.
I'm not suggesting make it mandatory, but it could be also.
Those were the voluntary options.
Stephanie asked which were primary and which were maybe not so prioritized, and I would argue that in the agriculture we see right now in the county, it's primarily permanent crops. Fallowing is not an option. Dryland farming is not an option. So those two are not necessarily, in my mind anyway, those aren't really viable options to any degree that you
can. I can't get them to go out there.
You don't get their dissipation. How are you going to compensate a guy for not planting an almond orchard for the next one?
No. So I'm just playing devil's advocate. Okay. So in any of these polygons, there's, let's just use cattle grazing, right? Where you might get into a drought situation where maybe there's some incentive on somebody that has a pasture to fallow that temporarily. Again, remember, it might be in a lot of these polygons, the number you got to get to make them okay is that I realize the vast majority is permanent crops, so it may not take a hell of a lot. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When you actually scroll through these, it's not the acre feet total that you're looking at that you need to produce isn't as bad as a lot of people think. Some of them are bad.
Right.
Don't get me wrong.
That's why I'm making that case that if some of them want to go the following out is
No, because you might want to pick 1,000 acres of prunes and I'm going to take 100 acres out. That's going to be fallow for something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you might want to wait a few years before you plant it.
Right.
Because you
get to instead of not going to.
You know, whatever that is.
And he might be incentivized to wait a couple of years.
Right.
In other words, it could be.
By cost points. I mean, that's it. That's how you.
No, I mean, so if you look at it in Butte County, they're going over something like that. It's it's the program's called Extend Orchard Replacement.
Okay.
So the scenario is if there's this dire situation, somebody's pulling it out, the proposal is from this fees that they're charging per acre to everybody. In the sub basin, that if they enter into a contract to not replant for X amount of time,
they don't get the fee.
They get incentivized. Yeah. I'm just telling you what they're looking at. That's been on the table down there for a long time.
They get cash.
Oh, so they're doing the pulling out of the fee.
They get paid to not replant.
Yeah. So if you leave it fallow, whatever. And I'm aware that I'm not sure exactly how far down the road that is. That they've been working on that for some time. Yeah.
Takes a big pot of money.
Yeah, so it all comes back to you got to raise the funds to do that. So you're going to have to have a pretty good fee base on every year to get an acre to raise a pool of money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also keep in mind when we're talking about money, the fees are not just for one thing right now. There are going to be other things that there are going to be fees for as we move down this road. Say, for example, litigation. Right? That also needs to have a raise.
Recharge.
Recharge has to have a raise pool of money, right? Finding water in all those scenarios costs money. And so we're not just talking about one fee.
A lot of people involved.
Yeah. So I would think fallowing, I would make the case that fallowing needs to be.
I was thinking in terms of annual versus permanent crops.
Yeah.
And there's a cut out there, like you say, for permanent crops to remove and not replace.
Or also maybe, and I use the cattle example, there might be others. It could be some very low row crop ground, but the grazing land that's being irrigated that maybe that they're approached on being reimbursed on during this bad cycle, not irrigating that year to compensate as an emergency effort, right, to save the so you don't lose your permanent crops.
So I've never gotten through this with you guys. I know I've talked about it a lot of times, but are we on the same page that expansion will be problematic if we continue to go down that road?
Where?
Generally.
I don't want to generalize. I mean, I'm specific to a location. I'd have the discussion for sure.
So let me ask you
this question. Al Green's property.
No, I'm looking at LM1 over there that says it's way overdrafted, and I'm not going to go down that road. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I'm going to tell you the math is right. So if you, whether or not you want to say, like, hey, I get what you're saying in the sense that right now it doesn't appear to be a problem, but you are falling. Your groundwater level there is falling, and there are things coming that's going to make that worse.
So it's falling at a rate that we've said is okay. That's not an emergency. Is it the
1.5? Correct.
The 1.5 foot a year or greater.
That's an undesirable result.
It's getting close to a disaster. It's gone from 22 feet to groundwater to 24 feet.
Right.
So I should be real nervous about that.
Right.
Over the course of the drought cycle.
That's sarcasm I'm reading.
Over the course of the drought cycle. Give me a frickin' break.
I'm not trying to argue.
I'm not going to generalize.
Yeah, that's why
I'm
not just generalizing that
what you're asking.
I'm going to tell you this just to be perfectly clear. If you go down the road of starting restricting what people can do in one place and restricting things differently in others, you are going to have battles.
Sure you will.
So just keep that in your head. Right? There are going to be battles about that. Because one guy is going to say, wait a minute. This guy right there can do whatever the heck he wants, and I cannot. Okay, that's a
bike. That's where we have polygons.
That was the purpose, right?
I want to, and, you know, stop at that point. And this is, so one of the things I was doing is trying, and I didn't know for sure where this meeting was going to go, but I wanted to make recommendations to ERA or David's engineers as far as what kind of questions I'd like to have answered or approaches considered. But that's one of the things. So I'm looking at, those who haven't seen this, this is the economic analysis of demand management conceptual allocation approaches. It was built by ERA. This is our consultant. They do the economic assessment. This is for the Coosa Sub Basin. And so I've gone over this, and you know, I would like to see something different for Tehama County than what's in here. But this is a foundation for what we want. And but one of the things that they did, you know, I'll just read the sentence. The first alternative would apply to Coosa Sub Basin wide, whatever the alternative that was. The second would target demand management to specific areas of concern. And I want to know, I want David's engineering and ERA to tell me, you know, how realistic is this? Okay. And so they kind of, you know, it's based on what you're talking about. It's like, you know, we're going to be looking at different areas differently and applying different approaches probably to different areas. So I don't know. I have a couple things here, but but I'm hoping, I mean, is that the purpose of the discussion right now, is to really help David's engineering or ERA as far as, or at least discuss some of these issues between us? One of the things so that they did here is they came up with, that was really interesting. They asked me what the impacts were, you know, on ag, the direct cost, and this is what their idea of direct cost is of demand management, is estimated here at the loss per net return to irrigated lands expressed as a cost per acre foot. So they're taking irrigated lands, they're allocating, you know, or figuring out what the cost per acre foot would be for some type of direct management. I feel that, and I'm not quite sure what I said is really understandable. I don't have a complete picture of how that number is used. But what I want to see come out of this is I want to see, well, you know, what hit our community takes. You know, if we're going to start demand management and we're going to see fallowing or reduction in crops and reduction in groundwater pumping, what is the hit to the community? I'm not sure how to get there, but it's really a much broader economic assessment of how everyone gets hit. Okay, by lack of, you know, revenue coming into the county, but also local business. I want to know what the impact to the county revenue is. So it's, and maybe, you know, we're, as Justin points out, maybe not as big as it could be or what I imagine it to be, which I'm hoping that's true. Because some of these polygons are not really in serious overdraft, but some are. You know, so some areas, so we may not be looking at the kind of hits that we imagine, and I would like this consultant to really qualify this for us. And the other thing too is, and I don't know if David's engineers can help with this, you know, but they've certainly been involved. But is there a rate of transition, you know, that softens the blow? Now we don't know if this is a big blow or not to the county, but is there a rate of transition that we can follow for some areas of the county, where we can soften the impact of what's going to happen? I would like them to use, and I don't know if this is useful or not, but I'll tell you, the Ag Census data from 2022 is really enlightening. It shows you a breakdown of farms, acreages, acreage sizes, income levels for these different classes of ag operations in the county. I don't know if that's something we can use, the consultant can use in this effort. If we really want to try to get an idea what the impact is, if we could do classes of farms, and by that I mean probably just sizes, okay? I think that would be valuable just to get a sense of what the hits are. I can give you an example. I found this data fascinating, but 50% of the farms in the county generate a gross income less than $10,000. Okay. So, I mean, I needed that number to get perspective of what it is we're working with here. I don't know that, and again, off the top of my head, I think that's about $800,000, as far as total income generated, for those classes of farms, they're only generating about $800,000 a year.
That's net income?
I think it's gross. From what I can read in this data.
I can understand where it would be net, because a lot of guys are running losses.
Okay.
The last few years. It's
what size is running a loss. So I'm not an economist. I am not on top of this. But if we can use all this data for us to learn what we're working with here, that's what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to know what the cost per acre is to take, acreage out of production. And so not as much of the cost per acre foot, but what is,
talking about to the over the next 30 years, the revenue stream to the property owner, the land value, or the tax revenue to the county? What do you have about?
I don't know.
So what do folks recommend if they're trying to get to that?
If I were to take, so what they did was they cost out the cost of demand management based on a dollar value per acre foot. Okay. I don't know how to look at that information and get a sense of how are people impacted with that.
You can multiply that number by the number of acre feet used on the various crops, and they're all fairly similar. Does that answer your question a little bit?
Well, it helps.
I mean, most crop crops, it doesn't matter what you're growing. I mean, we can talk subsections on the 3 to 4 acre footing.
But I would like to tell me why that's the parameter.
Because we're going to apply it across everything.
Yeah, and they're probably looking at, what is the cost of reduction? And if we're if we're going to ask somebody to cut back, then maybe that's the reason for taking it down to the per acre foot level. It seems kind of convoluted to me. Maybe just per acre make more sense. Because you're asking somebody to remove an acre of trees, what's the impact of that is what you're asking.
That's just a different multiplication, so it's easy to do.
Right.
All you're doing is dollars multiplied by pumped acre foot or dollars multiplied by acre. That's all easy to do. And by the way, when you're talking about that multiplier, that was a very valid point, right? That gives you a general sense of its effect. Right across the county, less specific, as you're saying, to certain entities.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that I don't know that I want a sub-basement-wide impact analysis. Latest numbers for corn and sub-basin, we're overdrafted 30,000 acre feet. Okay, so learning what the cost is per acre foot or what the demand management program is going to do tells me nothing. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, it does, because you can multiply that number times that 30,000 and get you your number.
Sure. Well, thank you. I think maybe that, and I'm not trying to shoot that idea down, but from what I'm hearing from you, and I'm not pointing the finger at you.
Point away. It's okay.
It's like, you may not be dealing with all the different polygons. You may not be looking at all the overdraft areas.
Right.
But we're going to be specific to certain areas. And so maybe we need to define, so we have our focus areas. Are we on agreement that our demand management program is going to focus on every focus area we've identified? Now, I think that's an important call to make. At this point, this is what we got. How big is this program? And is it every focus area or not? And so in that case, yes, it is mostly corn and sub-basin.
Can I give you just one thing about this?
Please.
I think that you're going to have to create programmatic triggers that are for everywhere. The thing is that lots of places are going to get them at very different times because of their condition. So the actions, the actions themselves will only occur in very few polygons.
Okay, I appreciate
that. Does that make sense? That, yes. That's sort of that clarity between.
No, you're right. And I think that's what we need is we need a standard trigger, but it doesn't, it's not applied to the subbase in it at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. And that can hold true for expansion as well. Right. You can do those sorts of things.
I know, so I don't know if I know Stefan, if all that made sense, what I'm after here, you know, but.
I'm not the one that's getting that, so I'm good. It's great to me, but the more that you can give some clarity of particular, of like what you're interested in, you identified, how, like, it's not just like a certain like impact just to, ag, you also want to be thinking more on the county, more like just local business, like so there's impacts broader to that. You've identified and like better understanding the calculations for like how, what's the metric for that, and how do you calculate that? How does it make sense? And so like better understanding how you feel about that, like where are your concerns, what do you think like makes sense? Like those all details are going to be really, really helpful for the consultant. It's going to be helpful for the consultant to know which polygon in particular you're concerned about and why. So that's kind of like what I'm hoping we're able to talk about and to bring back to the consultant.
So maybe there is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't want to change the subject. I got a question about the four bullet points to start with. Can we include pumping restrictions or for my way to have monitored wells? I mean, metered wells?
You can, because you can make, there are ways to do that. Because they can be, you can, they can be incentivized pumping restrictions, right? Where you say that we assume that you use this much water, you get, you're only allowed to use this much water. So either you're going to pay the penalty, or you're going to prove to us that you use only this much water. Yeah. So that is how you put a pumping restriction in place. It's financial.
That doesn't make much sense to me.
Explaining
our allocations.
Can you just go a little bit more into why it doesn't make sense?
I'm sorry.
Can you go a little bit more into like why doing the kind of the pay penalties, the financial way of
I'm just saying, if you can't quantify what you're pumping,
you have to make
assumptions. How are you going to restrict it?
With assumptions.
Pardon?
With assumptions. Walmart is going to say 3.8 acre foot per acre. You have 100 acres. You are pumping this much, but you're only allowed to have this much.
How are you going
if to, you want to avoid that fee, then you have to improve it by metering and showing us.
But how are you going to, this is just a question. If I have an orchard and I'm pumping 400 acre feet, and you're going to put a restriction on me, only pump 350 acre feet. I have no way of measuring that.
It's acre feet per acre, and there are many ways to measure that. But
you're going to pay the fee until you prove you
are. Yes.
Then I have to have
you're going to pay the fee until you guys learn what you got.
Where they're forcing you to voluntarily have a meter because they can't mandate it.
That's what I'm saying. You can't set that.
There are other ways to do it, by the way.
Yeah.
They do. They make sense. Like, for example, you know, if we said that the restriction's 3 acre feet in this area and the quantity's 3.8, so that means that you're 0.8 acre feet per acre, right? You can do that by sending PG&E bills that say, look, I've reduced my pumping usage by 1.9%. So that is that three, that takes that most of that 0.8 out or whatever it is. So there are absolutely other ways to do that. You can use it using ETOM. I mean, there are a lot of ways to do that that are not a meter.
And the same thing
about other agencies are using
it. Same thing applies to groundwater allocations. If I don't measure my water.
Same thing. Identical scenario.
I'm going to have to have some education because I don't understand where you're coming from.
Come on down. You know where I am. Let's do it.
So, Stephanie?
Yeah.
I just want to point, what I'm trying to clarify as far as the econ assessment is I want to know what all the secondary losses are. So not just to, you know, the ag grower, or not even a basin-wide ag loss. I am after, if I can, get it, impacts to the ag grower, but also impacts to the community economy and also impacts to county revenue. So, and that's what I call secondary losses. Maybe there's more. But that's
land values, depletion of land values.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's huge because when that happens, so you're going to plummet.
Yeah, especially that.
There's a ripple through the community. There's no doubt.
That's just the surface. There's much more.
Yeah.
One of the things I see missing up there on the voluntary options, and maybe it doesn't belong because it's a supply issue. It's recharge. See recharge projects up there on voluntary options. Is it somewhere else in a mindset or not? Or do we need to add that?
You know, I don't. We still need that feasibility assessment, you know, to make that call.
Which is happening now.
I printed out a scope for you so you can see what's on there. The agenda.
But I'm just saying it's a viable voluntary option.
Add it to the list, right? Yeah. In lieu of allocation.
I mean, we got an in lieu of this water there.
It could be we'll call it a mitigation. For lack of a better term.
True.
It could be a voluntary measure that you could do to reduce a fee or a restriction.
Oh. Yeah, the other thing I'd like to see out of this, since I don't have a handle on how this will be approached, I would like to see the consultant look at scenarios, for using different demand management alternatives. And I don't know what that looks like yet. You know, I'm shying away from basin wide approaches, and going towards the polygon approach to this. But I think that'll be important. And it'll help us get a concept of.
Well, I think probably, I'm assuming, but I would imagine there's consensus within the group that we would like to first look at those areas of concern. The polygons of concern are the ones that we probably ought to focus on to start with anyway. I mean, and, up until today, I assumed that the east side was in great shape. Now I'm being told it's not, but, my thought is that those polygons where you're seeing rapid decline in groundwater, I think that was described as what, more than 1.5 feet per year?
Over, that's the undesirable result.
Over a period. That those are the ones that we should at least begin to focus on.
Your triggers, though, are going to have to be countywide. And the concept, I think you're saying, is yes, those other areas that don't have a problem, they're not going to apply unless it becomes a problem. So I think you still need to look at it, that since you're going to have to implement it there, that when that trickles down, that it still works. That's all I've
got. It's all in play.
Yeah.
Certainly, but. If you're looking at something like a land use restriction, place to look first, I think, would be in the undeveloped areas that continue to develop that are already in pretty extreme overdraft.
Yeah, the polygons that have area to expand. But I mean, the reality is that if you set a trigger and you set a setup that says it, that will automatically come into play. Right? So, look, we're going to limit demand because we continue to fall. So whatever that number is that we all decide is the right number to set that as. Here's how much we're falling. Here's what stops expansion. Here's the consequence. Here's how much we're falling. Here's what stops. Here's what restricts pumping. Whatever those items are off of this list. And if you just set those everywhere, it's innate. You know what I mean? Eventually, if there is a problem, it'll prove itself out.
I appreciate the last thing you said. It'll prove itself out. There's a problem. But, I guess this idea of expansion, I feel that we're very limited as far as affecting expansion or reducing expansion. And so to me.
Can I tell you what?
Please go ahead.
My perception of those limitations are that this district has the authority to remove the ability to use a well. And so if you're going to restrict expansion, what you would say is if you install a well, you can install any well you want to, but if you install it in this area that has an expansion restriction on it, you cannot use it to irrigate crops.
That's ridiculous.
That would be the chance. So no one's going to do it, obviously.
Well, I think there's precedence on that down south. I saw one in the Ag Alert or one. There was a guy that said, man, I went out, spent $2 million on new wells to
add
a Sigma, and they said, sorry, but you can't use that.
Yep. Because we don't have the ability to restrict the installation of oil. We don't have the ability to create a land use change. But we absolutely have the authority to say, you cannot use that well because it causes a problem. That authority exists 100%.
You're gonna have legal challenge to that if you do.
It already has happened a lot.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, he'll say, well, my well is just, I have a right to use it just as much as anybody else has a right to use a well in that polygon.
Yeah.
So everybody's going to have free.
But the law has changed. I'm just telling you.
I'm not a water lawyer.
Just
saying.
What I hear in the biz right now is that that should stand. That's what I hear in the biz. But I don't know that there's a completed court case about it. I say completed. I almost guarantee there are current lawsuits about it.
Okay. Anybody else have ideas as far as what they want from David's engineering?
I think your comment about, other than just take your feet, I think you need to ask the same questions to David's engineering. I mean, they'll have a reason why they did it that way because they've done this multiple times. You know what I'm saying? It's not like it was from the cuff. I'm guessing you pose the same questions and they may try to convince you that that's it, but you can, I think what you're going to want based on what you're saying is just more details on additional impacts other than cost per acre, but community, countywide.
Downstream.
Yeah, and downstream stuff. I think it's that simple. Yeah. We ask them that.
I guess my thought is it's all going to be negative. That's a given. If we cut bag ag in this community, it's going to have a negative impact financially on a lot of people. So to me, it'd be nice to have a number, but that number's got so many other variables involved in it. What's the price of damage right now? What was it 5 years ago? What will it be 3 years from now? So you have to factor all of that in as well. I'm not saying it's not valuable to know because we know we're going to be making decisions that are going to affect people's livelihood and are going to affect people linked to that. My business is in agriculture, every bit of it. And so it's going to affect me if guys reduce. I know that is the case, but to me, it's. I don't want to say it's an abstract number, but it's a number that you're going to have a hard time really putting a pin on it.
And we're not trying to reach an agreement here. So it is helpful. It's helpful to hear from, because we brought you all together because you do represent and bring in different experiences and interests. And so hearing from others, what for others that we haven't heard from, what's important for you that you would like to see from the technical results?
I think it's important. And I'd like to see this analysis done over a range of market conditions.
The analysis you need to make assumptions, or they
need to clearly state those assumptions, there's a bunch of hand waving, and you need to clearly state those assumptions so that you know what you're looking at. But for example, the band value issue and everything else, I mean, that's a big deal, and that needs to be looked at.
It's hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, a lot.
Not just for
the big ones.
It affects the
Elvis, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's killing people down south is it's turning their loans upside down.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, it's hard to nail down because there's a bunch of variables. But you state what assumptions you're making, you state them clearly and make reasonable assumptions and then do the analysis.
I love that point, by the way. But the point of make sure you tell us exactly what the assumption
is. Yeah, and that's a lot of the paper. You know, in general, that's a lot of the problem I have with the whole data, quote unquote. Okay, so, you know, I'm just going to reiterate what I said before. In the few that I've looked at, I'm highly skeptical the accuracy or reasonableness of a lot of the data. For example, you know, supposedly all he was looking at was OpenET to get the in the groundwater only areas groundwater consumption.
Yes.
So how did that get screwed up in the first place? And there's been a bunch of hand waving as to what happened, but you know, specifically, I don't see, you know, okay, we made a mistake and this is what the mistake is.
None of what you're saying, the OpenET about the groundwater consumption has nothing to do with the sustainable yield.
Well, that's fine. Let's just go back to the wild variation and the numbers between the initial one, right? And then the subsequent one. The subsequent one looks more reasonable. I have honestly no idea whether it's accurate or not, but it looks more reasonable where the other one looked totally unreasonable. So how did that happen?
All right, so we have 3 minutes left, and we're going to solve everything in those last 3 minutes. So we have the initial list that the consultant sent us. It was also based off of the original list, and based off of the conversations, I bolded what seems to be rising to the top, allocations, DC3T, pumping restrictions. There is several questions about battling, recharge. The homework that I really, really am going to ask of you all is that after this meeting, we are going to circulate this for you to review this and let us know, like, is it accurate? Is there other things that you think should be right to the top, or things that you're like, nah, don't spend too much time on those? The ongoing list of the areas concerns, particularly Polygon, it just listed RB7, we looked at that last time. We talked about economic the impact, the secondary, kind of the trickle down things. We as much as possible want to get things at the Polygon level, not at the sub-basin level. So like this is some of the things that we've identified through the conversations. What we need is to hear back from you all so that way we can convey this over to the technical consultant as quickly as possible. So that's the request of the ask. Does that seem reasonable to folks that we'll send this out and you can all get back to us like what by the end of, they give you a week? Would that be just and also just throwing number the time out there? So that,
yeah, a week seems reasonable. Wednesday next week.
I mean, what more do you want? We've discussed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's just if anything else you see, because I know everyone's going to go home and think about this and be like, oh, wait, maybe I should have talked about this. Yeah. If there's anything else that comes in your head, we're going to give you a week to get it back to me before we start reacting.
I don't know if this demand management team is the right place for this, but, you know, we've always talked about inland surface water. We made a big deal about that in the GSB. I don't know that we've really quantified, you know, what role that could play. We know there's issues with it. I don't know that this is the place to iron that out, but I think we need more clarity on what inland surface water does for us and what it doesn't. And so,
where would that come from?
I mean, as far as, you know, who's capable of doing that? I mean, I don't.
Because I think it's super simple.
In my mind, it's very
different. I mean, you have X amount of acre feet allocated, right, by irrigation district. How much is that are they using? So the difference is what the potential is.
Well, I guess, you know, it's just not dependable. And that's the factor about that, you know.
You're saying the number is not dependable?
The supply is.
Yeah, I think I got a helpful explanation for this, if you let me 1 second. So both in lieu and recharge require water sources. And during certain periods of time, those water sources don't exist. So what is the overall effect as opposed to the year over year effect?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that's what you're thinking in mind, right?
Well, what's the overall? If you don't get surface water on a given year, but you've been using it multiple years, it's benefit to the aquifer, right? The fluctuation on supply is real, but if you're using in lieu instead of groundwater, even if it's a wet year, that's reserving that groundwater and holding your levels. So I think it's as simple as a 10-year average of what, you know, available surface water was on these districts, average versus what was consumed.
I'm going to pause here. So, like, if there's additional questions to follow up, then I think that we can clarify that after the meeting. So just because we are at 1 minute over, so I do want to kind of close it out. So process question. Our next generally regularly scheduled meeting would be not that. February 26th would be our generally the fourth Wednesday. Do folks know?
Can I do something? Maybe it might be better if we poll GSA and David's what they actually want to do a meeting. And then we'll put a poll all together for everybody about said, hey, here's the available times. Would that work for you all in February? And the sooner the better. I know it's your opinion. I'm cool with that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is we haven't talked about how we're going to, how we incorporate Glen County Demand Management Group into this mix.
And I'm going to set up a meeting for you guys to do that amongst yourselves. So you three that are the ad hoc head there with their three that are the ad hoc there. So you can sit down and say, hey, here's how we want to interact. Because they might have some different ideas than you. So I actually owe Lisa an email back about that right now to get that scheduled together.
Yeah. I would say it needs to be the group that's working on it.
It's harder to get everybody together, but those
so I think that, yeah, don't restrict. In the future, that might well be true. I'm just talking about the very first meeting so that they can say, hey, we want an entire group, or they can say, hey, we don't, and you guys can say, hey, we want an entire group, or we don't, and you guys can all work that out. As my presumption is that you should work that out. Right.
Okay, so the main next steps are we're going to poll the consultancy, what their availability is. Keep February 26th on your calendars, but we'll double check with consultants, and we'll loop back to you to possibly stay. Anything?
Is that a change in the hours now, going to 11?
That was if we felt like there was even more, because that has happened where there's just so much to talk about. 2 hours isn't enough. I will definitely call for some sort of bio break, promise, for if it goes longer. But one for folks to just hold for me too much.
Yeah, we want enough time for the consultant that we work on.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't know if that was a permanent change for that meeting.
I already have that disclaimer of my inability to commit to. So thank you all. We're going to close out the meeting, and thank you all. We'll be in touch. All the file postings and things like that will be on the website.
Quick question: how are you doing today?
Who's on the Corning sub basin, or what is that? I live down there.
I'm gonna.
Yeah.